I want to react in my own way to this article entitled Why I'm Applying to Yeshiva U. Now, I also applied to Yeshiva U, so I don't know, that, the title itself doesn't mean too much. However, when you see a Yeshiva U, my daughter applied to Yeshiva U, but that's not how Yeshiva U is, all right. What it really means is why a woman is applying to the Yeshiva's Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elkanah. And I don't mean it's the high school, which is also officially on the Yeshiva of Yitzchak Elkanah, central. I mean the smicha program of Yeshiva. She wants to get smicha from the Yeshiva. Now, yes, it's true. I'm a woman and I'm applying to rabbinical school at Orthodox Yeshiva University. Why are you? Why am I applying to a school that I know will not accept me? Oh, so that's already an interesting, good question. It's a very good question. So, this woman obviously is a very, fine woman. She says that she keeps the mitzvahs kashrus. 1 minute. Don't start. Start the good part. You have to be malam mitzvahs on everybody. Don't give no snide remarks yet. Let's first at least give the come on. It's not right. She keeps kashrus. She keeps Shabbos. She uses the mikvah of Taras HaMishpacha. She dresses modestly, she covers her hair, and she davens. So far, I mean, it's really gewaldig. I think so. She's up to it. We haven't had this film yet. However, she says she couldn't call herself Orthodox, capital O, which is unorthodox. And the first example, I pray every day with talis and tefillin. So let's discuss this issue. We had last year, we had Talmud who was writing back and forth in Hamavata, right? My friend, second, about a woman wearing a tefillin. And I was a little behind the scenes in some of the those writings back and forth. What's in fact wrong with a woman wearing tefillin? So at first glance, the answer is nothing. On the contrary, a woman should wear tefillin for kept. She gets high mitzvah, it's true. She's potter from tefillin. That's a fact. Mitzvah sasechus mangaroma. But I mean, women do observe other mitzvah sasechus mangaroma, and we commend them for it. Women hear shofar, women sit in sukkah, women take a lulav. So why is tefillin any different? It's a very good question. Really, it's an excellent question. And the answer to this question is very long. We're not going to go into all the pratim of the answer to the question. But I do feel that I should give you a brief analysis of it. Shulchan Aruch speaks about the issue of women wearing tefillin in Hilchos Tefillin, which is the right place for it to be. Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Tefillin discusses who is chayiv in tefillin, excuse me, and who is potter from tefillin. Shulchan Aruch says, Noshim avodim pturim mitzvillin. Vnei shimitzis hasasei shazman geroma. Says the Ramo, Dim ha-noshim rotzin v'hachmer al atzman mochin biyodim. If a woman wants to put on tefillin, you have to stop them. You have to protest against them, stop them from wearing tefillin. Why? Why? Says the Mishnah Berurah, Veshetzrichim gufnoki v'noshim ein tvizos lihi zohir. Now this has often been taken to mean that women in times of old had a very inferior standard of hygiene. Some have even connected this with the particular aspects of women's hygiene. To my mind, although there may be some who have expressed it that way, there's a much a different approach, which is the correct approach to this Mishnah Berurah, the sources that he quotes. Primarily. And that is that tefillin require gufnaki, and gufnaki doesn't just mean clean, the cleanliness of body, but gufnaki just also means, as Mr. Brewer, the very next sentence says, Lizar Davina Gufnaki, Gami Machshava Ro. Okay, a person shouldn't think what he shouldn't be thinking about while he's wearing tefillin. For this reason, it seems to me that tefillin is different than all other mitzvahs I say. You can't volunteer to put on tefillin. See, you can volunteer to do other mitzvahs. I'll volunteer to sit in the sukkah, to shake a lulav, to hear shofar. If I do a bad job, so I did a bad job. It's an expression they use in the Sfarim. Im lo yoa lo yazik. If it won't help, it won't hurt. Oh, you say in English, I have none to lose. So why not? There's none to lose. It seems to me that tefillin is an exception. You have something to lose. The person who wears tefillin and does not have a guf naki in a machshava tahora, then it's a negative. It's a bizoyan for tefillin. It's a strike against you. It's an aveira. Therefore, it seems the custom has evolved in Klal Yisrael. I use the word custom. The custom has evolved that we only wear tefillin when we have to wear tefillin. And we limit it as much as we possibly can. You probably know that tefillin is supposed to be worn all day. And that's how the Gedolei Yisrael to this day wear tefillin. Rav Scheinberg in Yerushalayim goes all day in tefillin. Somewhere Rav Tuskev, he also goes all day in tefillin in Torah Ora. And there are a few yechidim all over the world who do this. However, except for Yechidei Sgula, the Vilna Gaon, of course, is man who wears tefillin all day. But except for these Yechidei Sgula, the meaning of Yisrael is not to wear tefillin all the time. That we're just during davening shacharis, and that's it. Why? Every second that goes by, we're mevatel and misses asei midaraisa. As you and I speak, as you're listening, I'm talking, you're listening, right? As I'm talking now, I'm about to miss asei midaraisa. Should we wear tefillin? Should we wear tefillin? What's going on? Let's make a machah, protest. The answer is the minig evolved that since tefillin requires a high standard of gufnaki machshava nekiya, and we know that people are not going to be able to observe this standard across the board, we make a general policy not to wear tefillin all day long. Exceptions? Well, we really don't. I mean, there's no one I know that if you ask me that you should be an exception. We don't have exceptions. Yechidim, that's exceptions which they go, look, since I have a chiyuv all day, stop me from doing my chiyuv. True, we realize that Klal Yisrael has to stop fulfilling the chiyuv all day because after all, Klal Yisrael consists of so many yechidim, and most of the yechidim cannot have maintained the guf naki in the machshava tahora. So therefore, we have to even exclude those who could have maintained the standard because, you wear low plug. But we are exceptions and we have a chiyuv and we insist on maintaining the best of our ability. Sure, okay. However, a woman doesn't even have that. She doesn't have a chiyuv to wear tefillin all day. For her, it's a reshus. Very nice. She wants to wear tefillin. It's a very nice idea. It's a kiyum mitzvah. But because we're afraid that the mitzvah will not be performed properly, there'll be a lack of guf naki and machshava tahora. Not because she's a woman. I don't want to learn that shot. A man also has the same failings. We're all subject to chesroinus and a guf naki and machshava nekiya. So what do we do? So what we do is, we have no choice. We can't say, well, mention my tefillin anymore. There are those who have adopted that policy for other reasons. But we can't say that, because we have a chiyuv to wear tefillin every day, if not ideally the whole day. So the minhag became to be yotzi just during Shas HaTefillin. But a woman, since she's not obligated to wear tefillin, so the proper approach of her to tefillin should be not to wear them. Esther Amomi, that she wants to wear tefillin, you have to stop her. The same way, if anybody in this room would walk into my shiva tefillin, I would throw him out. Mochen liyod. I would stop you. Why? Because I don't feel you're in a madrega to wear tefillin all day. Huh? So the same thing applies to a woman who walk into my shul with tefillin. I say, please leave. Because you're not in a madrega. You're not in a madrega. I can't be. And even if you are in a madrega, let's say a guy will come to me and he'll show me, I'm on such a high madrega, and he'll show me what the... So, I'm sorry, I can't make... I'm not... power to make exceptions in my shir. You should wear tefillin and others say, well, why? More so? I'm less than him. Right? So someone will say, I'm less than her. So even if she grants that Mrs. X is on the star madrega, you have to make a low plug. And so that's what the Chazal said, of Mochel Yonah. For the same reason, by the way, I should add, tefillin is a unique mitzvah. Tefillin is a mitzvah with, according to Minhag Yisrael, this little, or some, perhaps no, chinuch. All the mitzvahs we start much earlier. There is sukkah and lulav and everything. Tefillin also really should start earlier. Why doesn't it start earlier? For the same reason. We're afraid of the bizdoyin and tefillin. If the child is not obligated to bar mitzvah, so then if you're going to come to wear tefillin, maybe a lack of gufnaki, mafshav, it's a whole story. So we don't have it. So you have all these three. You have tefillin and chinuch. You have tefillin shalom b'shas atfila. You have tefillin finoshim. It's all the same. It's not absolutely mandatory. So this minig evolved in Klal Yisrael that you're not allowed to wear tefillin. Once the minhag evolved, it's entirely possible, in my opinion, that now for a woman to wear tefillin is a nisa daraisa. Till now it's a really a minig, basically. But it's a minig which is a strong minig, found in the Ramah. I think it's the proper reason for it. Whether all we showed him agree or don't agree, that was the whole discussion I had with Vasa last week. You look it up in the library, back and forth. But once it evolved, and I think it's fair to say, as we sit here today, at the present time, that it is the, how should I put it, a universally accepted custom. Let me say universally, there are those who obviously are out to break it. Every custom, there are those who want doctor to break it. But except for those few people who are the hachas who want to break it, there's a universally accepted custom that women do not wear tefillin. Once that's been accepted, the Ramah has it, even the Sephardim have to have it as well, as far as I know. In those Sephardic communities where they wear tefillin, women, as far as I know, in the whole world. Right, I think they're more strict. I think the Ramah is the one who asked it, but the Sephardim will go along. Yeah. Therefore, maybe this is the Raisa. What is the Raisa? No, anybody can guess? No, not Medig Israel. Maybe this is the Raisa now. Anybody? No? That's a Chassadim Midas. That's right. Begadish. It's a Begadish. Now, obviously, Bismarck and Gemara, they weren't worried about Tefillin's Begadish. Old people, they hired, they put them back, because then it was still in flux. Some wore, some didn't wear, so then it wasn't something which only was worn by men. But now that it's only worn by men for the last hundreds of years since the Ramah, anyway, as far as we know, for the last, 400 years, there's been no place in the world that we know about. I know about it, so correct me if I'm wrong, where women wore tefillin 400 years. Any women wore tefillin. I mean, I have a woman and a picture of it, but there was, as far as I know, whatever it may be, who was that mullah who jumped in first? I'm not interested in assigning titles here. But it's accepted in 400 years in Klal Yisrael, Ashkenaz, Sfar, Hasidim, Misnagdim, whatever, all stripes, that tefillin are not worn by women. So if a woman wears tefillin, I think it's an issue of the rice of Begadish. Yes?
What do you mean by because I know, like, at least most people, I know, you have different
some start 3 months, 2 months, 1 month, one week, one day. But the person starts with another mitzvah much more than a month or 3 months before.
Fine,
went for a year before.
But that's something which you can, like, maybe it takes you time. Such you only once a year, I can understand.
All right. So the chenami, the truth of the matter is, tefillin a month before is a lot. I'm not in favor of more than a month before. Some of my kids started few days before. Some started the other month, even 1 day before. Some are 3 months before. That's the Yekesh Shemini. All right. They do everything three. But yes.
No.
Because the Yachid, who was accepting upon himself a chiyuv, because in theory we're all chayav to do it tefillin all day. So he feels, because I'm a chiyuv, so I can't, I know there's a minig Yisrael, but I'm a chiyuv, gevalt, my chiyuv. Woman has no chiyuv. She wants to do other mitzvahs, kiyumios, I'll give her a few other examples. But this should not be one of them. Yes? I'm not a Navi. I don't claim to have the Vua. I think maybe. I can't see it, but I'm not a Navi, so maybe. I can't see it, I said. I can't see it happening, but... yes? No, because tefillin, it's a Gemara. Tefillin, because you can carry HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name on you. The person has tzitzis. So tzitzis is not required in Gufnaki. Tzitzis is something which is has no kedusha. You can definitely finish tzitzis, you can throw it out, make it rid of it. Tefillin is like, it's like a sevatara, it's a shem Hashem, it's a kedusha vatara. So the body should reflect that kedusha vatara. That's the difference. Okay, anyway, that's as far as tefillin. As far as tzitzis, it's also called in Shulchan Aruch. Here we go. 1 minute. Mi em chayavim betzitzis. Noshim abonim pturim. Because the mitzvah says, "Hasei shazman derama." This is in Siman Yud Zayin in Vegas. Says the Mishnah. Says the Ramah. If they want to wear noshim abonim, they want to wear it. No, not so bad. Zman derama. But ach merzeki yuara. In other words, the reason why women don't wear tzitzis, shouldn't wear tzitzis, because it looks like you are. Why is it more you are than shofar? Why is it more shu you are than lulav? So there are more the following explanation. Lulav, I am required, a man, I'm required to take lulav. Shofar, I'm required to hear. Sukkah, if I eat, I'm required to eat in sukkah. So a woman, although she's not required, she's one step less in her chiyuv, she's not a no chiyuv, but she accepts it upon herself as a kiyuv. Okay? However, tzitzis, I'm not required, don't quote me here, but I'm not required to walk around all day long in my arba kanfis with my tzitzis. The halacha is, if you wear arba kanfis, you have to wear strings attached, right? But you don't have the arba kanfis, so that's it. There's no permanent chiyuv. Therefore, for a woman to go two steps, that she's going to say, hey, put on an arba kanfis, which she doesn't usually wear, right? Then she could stop there. I'll wear arba kanfis with no strings attached. She's allowed to, right? I can't, but she may. B, she'll attach strings to the arba kanfis. That's what's called merze kiyuarot, because it looks like she's trying to show off. He's trying to show off, and then merze kiyuarot is something which should not be done. And then, 1 minute? Okay, 1 sec. And therefore should not be done. Now, you'll ask a question. So what if a woman wears tzitzis and no one knows about it? No one knows about it. It's hard to say merze kiyuarot if nobody knows about it. The answer is, for all I know, there are thousands of such women. I don't know about it. If I don't know about it, so I don't know about it. But the minute I know about it, that's not like you are. She told somebody about it. All right? What?
Before we came to you and said, I'm not going to tell you whether or not I'm going to, but if I decide to, can I wait to no one ever find out about it?
Gosh, does it have to be... wait, I'll tell you in a minute. I think it's with the butt. The butt is the same as my tefillin. It could be. But unless my facts are wrong, could be there are thousands, there are tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of women that I don't know about are wearing tzitzis, in which case my next statement is wrong. But in case no women are wearing tzitzis without my number, except for the few who are wearing tefillin too. But if my analysis is correct, it could be I'm wrong, that no women are wearing tzitzis, and this woman X decides to wear tzitzis and hide it under her shirt, I'm afraid of something.
Begadish
again. Both? She can wear a blouse. Okay. If she wears a blouse, which is a normal, regular blouse that other women wear, and it has four corners, and she tucks the strings under the skirt, so you can't call it Beged Ish, because no man ever wore such a crazy thing. Ever heard of a man wearing a shirt with tzitzis? I never saw such a thing. So you can't call it Beged Ish, and you can't say it's URL because it's tucked under the skirt, no one knows about it. Could be it's okay. I don't know. Think about it. Could be it's okay. Yes, Alicia. No more kavua now than what time there are more. Probably less kavua. I don't know. Before there are more. Anyway, that's, I just wanted to start off the shiur by talking about the unorthodox practice of wearing palace and so, which is really is unorthodox, but not only unorthodox with a small O, it's unorthodox with a big O also, because it's against the halacha. It could be a thing that the rice of Beged Ish, and even if not, certainly against the Minhag HaRamah, and there's no source that we know about that permits such a thing, such that should not be done. Vital. Not only do I go to shul every Shabbat, but I usually read from the Torah at my minyan. Now, I want to respond to this in two ways. I'm not sure what the pshita. I have to respond. I don't know what it means. 1 second. I'm not sure if she means the word minyan literally. There's a minyan of 10 men, and she reads from the Torah. Maybe that's what she means. Or if she means there are 10 women. So let's analyze one by one. If she reads for a minyan in the literal sense, there are 10 men there, then it's a chanaf in the Gemara. Mishnah Gemara, Megillah, Daf Chav, Gimel, and Aleph. Hakol Olam, the minyan Shiva. That's a Mishnah, it's a Gemara, a Memra, in Megillah Daf Chav Gimel Amud Aleph. She'll say, no problem. Her tzibra is merchel and it's covered. Right? She has also a minyan, obviously they say they allow her, that she might have the best balkari in town. So they allow the Gemara on the cover of Tzibur, and they allow the woman to lay in. It's a question in Poskim. I just noticed. Look what Sefer they put on the front cover.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
We noticed it a long time ago.
Pnei Yeshua. That makes sense to this. Oh my gosh. Alright. So can a tefillah be machal on its cover? This is a serious question. Not so poshut. Because the expression for a tefillah is found in many contexts in the Gemara. Not just over here when it comes to Isha to Kikur Batorah. It's found elsewhere in Shas. A chazan has to dress a certain way by the tzibur. He can't be a pocheach, the Gemara says in Masechta Megillah. The next step, chav dalet. You have to wear sleeves, you shouldn't go with the with clothes, we should be covered on tzibur. So what if the tzibur is machal on its cover? This guy goes in a tank top, but he has the best voice. He wears shorts, you know, and sandals, but he's wow. He can hear him all over the shoulders, and it feels gavaldic. But we even like the decor. We think that's a very appropriate. Well, so could the TV muffle on its cover? Something so the Shilta Gibarim seems to say there. Like, maybe yes, maybe it can be muffle on its cover. Maybe not. Possibly say that maybe that's what they can't be muffle on its cover. They'll get to reading from a chumash, not a full Sefer Torah. Once again, it's not going to be covered at Tzibur. A machlok is going to be mechila on its cover. So as far as that's concerned, maybe the Tzibur where this woman, if it's a regular minion, they're muffle on their cover. Would they be well advised to be on the covenant in such a circumstance? I don't think so. But maybe they do. If they do, then yeah, Kolish is a problem. Kolish is a matter of some post can indicate that covenant tzibur really means Kolish. That's what the lack of sneers. I'm sorry.
Well,
it could be the pshat is that it's not really Kolish. That's a question. So it's, maybe she lays in a monotone. Or maybe they lay. Maybe the chant is not considered a kolisha. It's not really a song. It's just a chant. Maybe some say that davarim shel kedusha is not included in the issur of kolisha. There are other maybes. I don't know which is the right maybe. Maybe they describe it. That's exactly the issur of kolisha. I don't know. Any event, perhaps that's the intent of this article. Maybe. In which case. I don't think it's the right idea to be mochel on the cover of the tzibur. In general terms, it shouldn't be done. And could be can't even do it. And we'll see in a minute. There's another reason which I think I have to yet discuss with you. But more likely, and again, I don't know the situation. More likely, the word minyan is just used as a kitzer. It doesn't really mean minyan in the classical sense. But it means 10 women. This is what we call a women's tefillah. Women's tefillah group. They're very careful. Sometimes they use the expression women's tefillah. It's a women's minyon. Don't call us women's minyon. We're not a minyon. We're just a women's tefillah group. Now, women's tefillah groups began in this country about, 14 years ago, something like that. That's when they moved to Orthodox synagogues, put it that way. Before that, maybe the only group we met in other non-Orthodox synagogues, maybe private homes. And the reason I know this is because I was looking up as part of our B'lavim Pesach, don't forget, Mechiras Chametz. So I was looking through some old Shabbos Agadah Rosh. I found two that discussed the Inyan of Mechiras Chametz, which I put into my file. But just then I happened to notice the Shabbos Agadah Rosh from Tav Shin Mem, which was, there was not a version, it was the year before, which was about, I don't know how it came in, get in there, but it was about women's tefillah. And it was very, very sharp. I found it hard to believe I said it, which I wrote down in my notes, but maybe I did. That's when it first began. I mean, it began in the Orthodox synagogues, and I don't have to mention which synagogue it began in, but I was asked to speak about it. Let's leave it at that. We'll figure out the rest. The problem is, and as a matter of fact, subsequent years, people don't understand why I got involved in this. I usually don't get involved in such things. There was an infamous appellation known as the Reitz Five. The Reitz Five. That was someone with some journalist that used that expression. Since then, I don't talk to journalists. since then, since that incident took place, and some journalist said, I said, by the way, I don't have sense not to talk to journalists. I don't talk to journalists. Okay, but answer me my question. I said, I don't want to talk to you. But answer me anyway, well, not for quotation. And the guy I was telling said a couple of words, nothing too terrible. The rabbi was quoted and misquoted and derayed and ungederayed. So that's it, since it's already that many years. I don't want to say hello to them even. It's hard to be, I don't want to consider to be impolite, but it's very hard to deal with these people because they feel they have the different Shulchan Aruch. That's what we're asking about Lashon Hara, and they have different liberties they can take with our Shekhar Tirch. And it's all for the, general good, the good of the people, they have to know, the right to know. Okay, believe me, I have a right to say no. They have a right to know, I have to say no. What do you mean? It's like I was calling right at his telephone, right at his phone. Some journalist, I don't want to mention his name, and talked to me about something, nothing to do with this issue, about some different issue. And I say, I called you, why don't you call me back? So I said, I usually don't talk to journalists. And he starts giving me the riot act. You're shaking, it's as if it's one of the, you'd give him a Ikari Amud to talk to journalists. And I was such a, he's blasting me on the phone, I still hear it, ringing in my ears. Whenever I try, journalist calls up, he happens to be up, so I use him for whatever. He writes all over the place, I don't want to mention his name, you've seen his name in print many times. So anyway, so, when this, I was asked, some years, this was back to the spring of 1980, and some years later, I think it was almost 5 years later, I believe it was, that Shiloh, this was some of the Rabbanim here in the Shiloh, what about this women's tefillah with the lady, the whole story, we came out against it. There were five Rabbanim signed, and I signed, I usually don't sign anything. I felt I had to sign it, because I was very much against it, I'm still very much against it. After I signed it, and don't ask what went on, back and forth, and some other longer article, and another one, the whole world was tumbling at the time. But I think that I have no regrets about the signature, and I think that it did a very great service to the community, because there are Orthodox rabbis who are the very serious pressures from women to do whatever, what's wrong? I mean, first glance is gewaldig, right? It's great. And I think that they would have done it, and I couldn't really have blamed them for doing it. They didn't realize how much was involved, and they didn't do it, because look, how can we do it? The Rosh Hashiva is from our yeshiva. They're not the Rosh Hashivas from other quote, Haredi yeshivas, end quote. But it's Faken, they didn't say anything. They the Rosh Hashivas from this yeshiva who signed up on it, and therefore, I think it did what it had to do. Then, after it was signed, so there was a women's tefillah here in Washington Heights. The Washington Heights, right here. How much of it still exists? Could be it does. Meditama Tauf. And a woman who I do know, a very fine woman, who I know, as a matter of fact, from when she was still single, she was we have children in the same class in school. She called me up, what's going on here? You're not some reactionary Neanderthal man or some caveman. What are you doing? We're signing this thing for? To have a couple of important reasons. Can I meet with you? I said, sure. Can I bring some of my friends from the world? I said, sure. So I remember I met with them. I remember like yesterday. I was still giving the shiur in the corner room. I think it was 3:15 or so. It's been many years. So it was one of those years, I was still giving 3:15. And I said, come a certain time. As well as giving a b'china. I still remember, I wanted to say, so I was giving a b'china at 3:15, it was Sunday morning, and I moved it to 3:40 when we were there on Shia, and I was tired of shmooze with the women who came in. And every once in a while I had to look, see they weren't cheering in the beginning. I remember this scene etched in my mind. And as fate would have it, how many women came to see me? So I explained to them why I was opposed to the women's tefillah. But first of all, there are many women's tefillah where they go against halacha. And if others which don't do it yet, may do it in the future. And I was vindicated. A few years later, some of them who were very careful changed. What's against halacha? If you have 10 women, how should I say it? 10 women do not a minyan make. Do not a tzibur make. And therefore, you may not recite the Dvar Moshe B'Kedusha in the presence of 10 women. It would be a Baruch Ol Avatolo or things. So, for example, Baruch Hu may not be recited if there are 10 women. So, too, the Birchos HaTorah may not be recited if there are only 10 women. It is true, at the beginning, when it first started out, at least the better ones of these groups, they didn't say the Brochas. They only said the first Brocha before the Aliyah. And the grounds for it was, it says, what do you mean? The Din Mefurish. The Din says in Shulchan Aruch. Everything has a little bit of truth to it. There's always a little bit of truth to everything. Shulchan Aruch says in Siman Mem Zayin, in Aruch Chaim Mem Zayin, that's the last Sif, if I'm not mistaken. Sif Yudalit, Noshim Mevarachos Birchas Atar. Sure. What did they do? They told the women, they didn't advance, who's going to get an Aliyah? As you, 8 women, are going to get aliyahs, so you shouldn't say a Birchas HaTorah in the morning, as the Shulchan Aruch says. You hold off for your Birchas HaTorah, and then you'll be able to say the Birchas HaTorah when you get your aliyah. Not, what could be burned at that? Can't, it's not a Birchas HaTorah. Ava Rabba. Some of Husha Shana Al-Asar, they didn't learn, whatever, it's in three Arois. Of course, the problem is, the major problem, not with the aliyah as such. The problem is that they said Krishma, they're from a friar. If they only come into Delaney, they wouldn't be from at all. This is a pure act. No. But Faket, they were Yerei Shemayim. They davened with Krishma, Pesukah, the Zirma, before it. And they said all that before Birchas HaTorah. It's not right. Yeah, but Krishma not just together to you. Krishma's together to us. That's the proof that that's Faket, yeah. So the kids say, that's a problem. Okay, but that's a side problem. Although you shouldn't discount side problems. All of a sudden I find out that the women's tefillah started to say a bracha afterwards and a bracha before the haftorah and a bracha after that. So what is going on over here? So a bracha levatala. Well, they dug up some Masecha Sofrim somewhere and they misinterpreted the Masecha Sofrim against the class of the Bible called Nachas Yaakov, the Bible of the Masecha Sofrim. Based on this, what I consider to be a misinterpretation of the Masecha Sofrim, they came up. Some up say, that for these brachas don't have a minyan, and therefore you can just make a bracha like this without a minyan. Now, I've never heard of anybody, who decided one day, he's sick, he can't go to shul, but we'd have Torah with a bracha before and after. Never heard of this in my life. All of a sudden, they found, Malka Menichel El Nizgada, they found that for some of the Torah, which they interpreted in that way. So I said, my first objection is they're doing things shalom kalom. And even those who don't may have to do so in the future. And I'm not giving myself powers of prophecy. It's the old slippery slope that you have to be very careful whenever you make an innovation, especially when it's not done with the blessing of Gedolei Torah, that, who knows? Where are you going to draw the line? And it turned out what I said came out to be true. That there was a lot of the time they weren't. Most of them weren't. Some were then even. It goes back many years. So that was bad. 9 years, I'm guessing. I can't remember exactly what year that was when it came to me. And I signed it. It was this time of the year. I remember I signed it with Yad Kislev. That's what I remember. When's this Paris? I signed it on Yad Kislev. I remember that was for some, it was by coincidence. I think it was 9 years ago. That's what I think. I don't know. I think it was 9 years when I signed it. I don't remember exactly. I think. That's my recollection. Yeah. So that was objection number one. That there's some who violate or may come to violate halachas, and that's true. Both parts of it observed to be true. Part number two, Rabbi Osai. Part number two is that it's a change in Minhagi Yisrael. Changes in Minhagi Yisrael are very, very problematic, and although I'm not saying there's no room for change, some things do change, but you have to be very careful in how it's done, why it's done, etc. What do I mean by that? The women said we can't, we don't like davening in shul, it's too noisy in shul, it's just an act, it's a fashion show, it's not really spiritual. We want to have a spiritual experience. We come together to daven with a spiritual experience. My response was, Tavo Alechem Bracha. You should get together to daven. Go to someone's house, and that's wherever it may be. And you should daven together. Now, I don't advocate it as a rule, because I do think that that what we call tefillah b'tzibur in the classical sense, which is a minyan of men, has certain innate and intrinsic pluses, which are very hard to overcome. First of all, the Gemara has an expression that whenever there's a tefillah of a tzibur, so it's miskabel, you shouldn't just jump to daven b'yichidus if you can avoid it at all. Second of all, if you daven b'yichidus tzibur, you have certain things you can answer to. Kaddish, Kedusha, Baruch, even a potter from it, perhaps. Thirdly, have a kriyas Torah in a formal sense, which women, although they're not going to run to the chayav, most women say they think they're potter. But still, it's something which is instituted by the Chazal. But, despite all that, if women felt that they have to get together as a group and they can't do it some other time, I mean, I think they could do it in the afternoon. They go to shul and agree with them. Despite all that, if they felt they had to get together because that's the only way they can grow spiritually, I could see it. I could hear it. But, said I, just don't use the Sefer Torah. So one lady says, but what do you mean? I have such hanah from the preparing the laning, and it enables me to, by preparing the trup, enables me to get a greater insight into what the Torah Kosher says, and it gives me a, I said, fine, no problem. I have a ticker. I'll lend you my ticker, and read from the ticker. It will indicate that it'll give you the challenge of having to prepare the trup, and therefore you'll have the other. No, I want the Sefer Torah. I want the Sefer Torah. Yes, I could offer them my kids' paper Sefer Torah too. Okay, from the Simchas Torah, the little one. They want a kosher Sefer Torah. So the question is, that's a major change in the Minhagei Yisrael. A major change. I know that Rabbanim have traditionally been very, very loath to give their blessings to such changes. Very slow to give. I know Rav Soloveitchik was quoted in a sentence written by his nephew Rabbi Meidelman in the context of, I think it maybe even preceded this women's tefillah, but it had something with women's hakafas. I think that's what it was about. Women want to take a sefer Torah. Well, hakafas, what could be bad about that? Well, all hakafas not found in the Gemara. At least laying found in the Gemara. So you're corrupting something from the Gemara. Yeah, the whole hakafas not found in the Gemara. So what could be so bad? I mean, what could be so bad? So Rav Soloveitchik, Zichron Levach, was quoted by his nephew saying it was against. Why is it against? If I recall the phrase correctly, it's a change in synagogue etiquette. End quote. I think that's what he said. Something not that, those words are words similar. Which the Rav felt was improper. So then someone asked him, the Rebbe, is it also? And that's the word also is a very loaded question. It's a loaded word, also. What does the word also mean? So that, if I'm not mistaken, that someone quoted, it wasn't there. Someone said, well, the Rav said it was not us. Shouldn't do it, but it's not us. So if it's not us, so then why is it? So why shouldn't you do it? So I believe it, the Rav was speaking in brisk speak. That was his language. Brisk speak to be usher has to be a violation of one of the Lav and Daraisa, or the Thurim Medina de Gemara, and that's usher. But to do something which is improper, but it's not an absolute violation of one of the actual 365 los essays or some yom derabbanan, you can't say it, you just shouldn't do it. If I told somebody, if the Rav said it's not us, but if you ask the Rav, Rebbe, if I'm not going to wear tefillin one day, is it usher? I'm not going to say Krishna one day, is it usher? The Rav said, no, it's not an usher. The bittul kiyum asay, it's not an usher. When the Rav used the word usher, he meant in a very narrow sense. When the Rav said don't do it, they admit the Rav said don't do it. So I said, well, that's what he meant. He didn't mean don't do it because I don't like it, you know. Like I say, don't do it, I don't know, walk on the right side, walk on the left side of the street. I thought, when the Rav said don't do it, he meant, according to his understanding of the Dinei Torah, it shouldn't be done. I call that usher. We discussed a little bit last week. It was about that editorial, about, you know, the line between what's absolutely prohibited, the Rebbe's Lashon Hara is usher. And if someone does something which is ill-advised and may cause damage and may cause hezek, and based upon his understanding what may cause damage, well, then I don't have to listen, because I have a different understanding of what's going to cause damage and what's going to cause hezek. That goes to the whole issue of das, Torah, and then v'chule. That's another shia. Maybe you know, we'll touch upon a little bit as we speak. But I'll call upon him, the Rav's das, Torah was not to do it. Listen, at the very least. And maybe he meant even worse than that. Maybe he meant even more than that. Because he knew it was us. Assume he didn't use that. It wasn't there either. He says that also means not one of the Lavim or the Yisurim, the Rabban, which are found very specifically in the Shulchan Aruch. That's my second problem with this women's tefillah. Again, the first was they go against halacha mamish, which I think they have done. Even then, some are doing it. Now, many more are doing it. Mamish yisurim gemurim brachas levatol. Number two was the fact that the shinoyim in Hagi Yisrael, which is unjustified, doesn't really have a basis that they could just suddenly turn around and do something new. And I consider that really to be an isser. And if it's not an isser, it's certainly against the Das Torah of Gedol Yisrael from many, many camps, not just from certain camps. And it's number three. And for the Rama, number three, yes, David. Very good. Excellent. Excellent question. And that's going to bring me a little bit to my third point. Let me go back to the Chofetz Chaim. Chofetz Chaim is a famous psak in the Likutei Halachos of Masechet Sota, which he writes that although it says in the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch that a woman should not be taught Torah by her parents, the father shouldn't teach his daughter Torah. Today, he writes, 100 years ago, on the contrary, a woman should be taught Torah. What's the reason? Times have changed. In the olden days, the Chofetz Chaim, women were illiterate. Literally illiterate. Doesn't sound so good. Literally illiterate, but that's what they were. They couldn't read or write. And they got married at a young age, and they grew up only in the holy home of their parents, and they moved straight from the parents' home to the husband's home, and that was it. At a young age, they were completely separated from the outside influence of the world. That's their own little shtetl, that's how it worked in Europe for hundreds of years, and before that in other areas of where the Jews lived. But now I've come a time that women have actually learned to read and write, yes? To read and write. To read and to write. And they're not always under the apron of their mothers, but they're exposed to the influence of the outside world. Therefore, at the time, it's critical that they be given a Torah education. Now, that's a very major step on the part of the Chofetz Chaim, which encountered, as David implied, fierce initial opposition. But I mean fierce. And the Chofetz Chaim's allies at the beginning were few and far between. You probably are aware that a feud has arisen as to how to apply the ruling of the Chofetz Chaim, which was made 100 years ago, and now 100 years later. So there are those who maintain, well, whatever the Chofetz Chaim said, that's it. And not one step further. So whatever the Chofetz Chaim allowed in his day, they should learn Chumash, and they should learn other things, whatever you have to consult in the exact text, that's it. But not an ounce more. Nothing. I'll just say, what are you talking about? The Chofetz Chaim. What's the loss of the Rambam? It's usher to teach it you shouldn't. Loyal Amorites beat the Torah. And Torah should have stopped. And that's not simple to Torah should have paid. It's the same usher. Loyal Amorites beat the Torah. Tzivu Chachamim is all discussion. It doesn't mean an Isser. It doesn't mean an Isser. Laniyah's Daiti. The Chofetz Chaim, not that he decided, I am Chofetz Chaim, I'm hereby abrogating an Isser of the Gemara. We should ace Lat Hashem and Ferret or Hashem. An Isser, Yedin of the Gemara, Isser, Mikyuradin, to write down the Torah, Sheval Peh. And the Chazal said, ace Lat Hashem and Ferret. We are hereby abrogating this Isser. I don't believe the Chofetz Chaim felt that he was 100 years ago abrogating an Isser of that nature. Because I don't think he felt that the with Chazal, and not the daughter Torah was the same level of Isser, which was derived from a pasuk, like Torah should be our passion, after it kept all and not written down. I think that he felt, again, I can't be sure, not to say the Lashon of Chofetz Chaim is not completely clear on this, but my opinion is that Chofetz Chaim meant to say Chazal had good reason why the daughters of Israel should not be taught Torah. A lot of good reasons, and the Gemara sort of gives some of the reasons for it. And the Rambam explains what the reasons are, and others give different explanations. That they may use the Torah that they're taught to move away that which the Jewish woman was called upon to do. Now, in those days, what she called upon to do was to be in her home, in her mother's home, to get married at Tana Shimono. That was it. And put the train of children to be God-fearing, Torah observant. That was a Jewish woman's role, nothing else. She was kept completely away from the outside influence. Right, always something snuck in a little bit, but basically she was kept away. And the rabbis were afraid that the woman is given Torah knowledge. She should be more sophisticated. Ooh, this sounds interesting. I'm getting educated. I'm educated with Torah. Hey, Torah Mada, right? So I want to get Mada. I want to go Mada, so I want to go out to the world. I want to go out to the world. In those days, for a woman to go out to the world was spiritual suicide. The Chazal were afraid of this, and there was very good reason to be afraid of it. If you look at the history of women, even great Jewish women, there were those who learned a lot and they made mistakes. Maybe they were better off if they just stayed in an unlearned state. That was the Chazal's feeling. I believe it. Chabad Chaim thought, that's the feeling of the Gemara. That the Chachmei HaMesorah telling us, this is how you should teach your daughters, yes, this, yes, this, no. But now, asked the Chabad Chaim, Bavono Seinu Aradim, due to our great sins, that the ghetto walls have been breached completely in almost all circles. And the Jewish women were going, just like the Jewish men, completely larit v'labahola, were being lost by the thousands left and right all over the place, to all different kinds of isms, and different kinds of movements, and different kinds of lack of observance. The Chabad Chaim, now you have to, it's like it's the opposite. Now if you don't teach your daughter Torah, it's as bad as if in the old days you did teach your daughter Torah, it's even worse. It's the opposite of teaching more Torah. It seems to me that that's the case, that if when you read and write, catch it now, that's all he said, read and write. Just that you learn how to read and write is enough to set the alarm bells ringing the Chabad Chaim that they're reading and writing. So they're going to read and write, and then read and write whatever, Polish, German, Russian, Hungarian. And they're not going to be taught some Jewish education, they're going to just become secular. So read all the schmutz and all the magazines, but that comes out of in those languages, they won't have any Torah to balance it off. To be a spiritual disaster. That's what Chabad Chaim said. More than that wasn't necessary. To combat reading and writing, and they were reading and writing the Goyish language, they should read and write Hebrew too. They should know a little bit Chumash, they should know the basics, yeah. But the question comes, now they just don't read and write. Now they get PhDs. Because they are, but PhDs are not everyone. But college degree. Everybody. You know women in the quote modern world that don't go to college. The thing that they have to be given a greater degree of education. Einochinami. In a world in which you feel that it's proper, a Jewish woman should not go to college, and they in fact don't go to college, and they don't have this high level of sophisticated secular education beyond high school, then I don't believe it's necessary to teach so much in Torah knowledge either. Zelu mazeh. But it's principle, I believe, that it's a question of just reacting to the reality. My personal position in that matter is that women should be given a solid education. Education should consist of basics of Yiddish which they're required to know, should consist of halacha which they're required to know, and it should consist of hashkaf which they're required to know. My personal opinion is that Gemara, which is a big fight to have nowadays, is not something which you should run to teach to Jewish women. Why not? Are they going to Columbia, so that's it. That's a part of the top. First, I think it's a battle which can be won, so we can try to explain to the Jewish woman why they shouldn't be going to Columbia, but it shouldn't be going to these Ivy League colleges and schools, because this is something which is, by and large, you know, there are always exceptions to the rule, is not exactly the proper place for a nice Jewish girl. Right? And even if they're going to Columbia, I'm just using that as an example. I don't mean to pick on any one school. Well, no, that's where they're occupied the most on. In Columbia, Barnard, they're more than any other school. So I believe that there's enough which can be given to them in terms of intellectual stimulation within the general rubric of Torah Shabbat. I include Rashi, not just not Rashi, Rashi with the Mefarshim and the super comment of Rashi. And it includes Ramban. Chumash Ramban is what is accepted in many, many schools. My daughter went to a very frum high school. She went to Beit Yaakov of Muncie, the Rebbe of Soloveitchik, that's the Holy Terror. And they studied there Chumash Ramban. And she was very sophisticated and studied in terms of Diktuk. I remember once in the 12th grade, they gave her some kind of a test. And we sat down for a half an hour. I was amazed how much Dixon my daughter knew. I would say certainly more than my son. And they go to good yeshivas. Wow, the Hofbauer was there. That's unbelievable. So, and it's a good, you know, knowledge of Tanakh. And some halacha. Halacha has to know all the dinners. No? To my mind, that gives you quite a degree of intellectual sophistication, including some of the methodology of Torah Shabbat there. I mean, what is coming to Rashi, really? But we spot them with Rashi. My point is Torah Shabbat there. As a matter of fact, there are those who say you can't learn from coming to Rashi either. Okay. But I'm not saying it to you. If it's in my opinion, if it's not prohibited to learn Chumash and Rashi, then it's not prohibited to learn Bava Kamma either. Because Rashi quotes Bava Kamma in every line in this Parashat Mishpat. I'm not saying it's prohibited to learn Gemara. I don't think it is, but I think it's permissible. I just don't think it's such a great idea. And after all, the whole issue of Talmud Torah for women, as I said before, is an issue of, in my opinion, I think it's called the time, is what's good and what's bad. That's my opinion. That's where I own. And I'm sure that those who think I'm much too liberal, really, Kisser, even Rabbi Moshe wrote a chum, it's also the Lemishnites. And the other thing, I'm much too strict. What do you mean? What are you with such vestiges for? Open the Gemaras. What's going on? Read the program. Why not? I'm explaining to you the why not. I'm a little bit of a, you know, in between those two positions. Everyone in between two positions. So there are positions who are for much way further over in both directions. I'm giving you my opinion. Right. This is as far as your question is concerned, Dave. Let's go on. All right. Hold on. So here's the very important. Don't misunderstand my intentions. I am an activist. I act on my convictions. But I am not a man wannabe. When I was a kid, I heard of it as a Spiegel wannabe. I never heard of a man wannabe. All right. There's new Zakan over here. I do not perform mitzvot that are usually done only by men only because I want to prove a point. So let's look at the next step. While it would be dishonest for me to claim that feminism has nothing to do with my taking upon myself these obligations. Stop. Tired of disaster. I don't want to be a man. I'm not a man wannabe. I don't want to prove a point. But the woman's honest enough to say that she's a feminist. Right? Now the word feminist, that's a tough word. What does it mean to be a feminist? If a feminist means that you believe that women shouldn't be downtrodden and that women shouldn't be relegated to second-class citizenry, then I have to admit I'm also a feminist. Yeah? I'm a feminist? Can I do? It's okay. If a feminist means that you attempt to solve some of the problems which beset Jewish women, problems of women who are unfortunately battered, Rahman al-Islam, problems of women who are held as agunas, Rahman al-Islam, problems of women who are single, Rahman al-Islam. You have to try to, I don't mean at age 15, I mean they're single, and you're trying to help them out, then I'm a feminist too. I've tried in all these three areas, in some measure of success, to try to help people out. But if the word feminist is used colloquially, and again, I don't know what the word means, use the word feminist, but cares. Feminist is a man wannabe. That's what a feminist is. Or, better than that. They're not a man wannabe. She wants to be better than men. Not better, but not better, but stronger, and she wants to redress the wrong. I have to tell you, in Chokhov Azayim Tamin, I used to subscribe for many years to a magazine, because I feel I have to, as a Rav in a shul, and even as a Rebbe in a shul, I have to know what's going on in the world a little bit. So I subscribed to a magazine called Newsweek. Many, many years. I stopped. Why? With increasing frequency, I used to have to rip off the cover of the magazine. One, twice, three times, four times, this is crazy. And I'm a big liberal. I didn't rip off the picture of a woman on the cover, I didn't rip it off. I didn't rip this off, you know? But it was not much vulgarity. I had to stop subscribing to that magazine. Couldn't help it. Right, that's what's going on. They told me there's one day that some yeshivas allow you to subscribe to. It's called U.S. News. So I changed to U.S. News. All right, this is some of the nice stuff, Taylor. What can I do, guy? You have to stay up your principles. For now, you are super. One thing I got to tell you, they have this. See, news gets to switch off to the conservative and the liberal and their editorial. They want to make everybody happy. But U.S. News, nah. They don't know this guy who's a starter. He writes, oh, he's convulsing. He says, but he phrased it in a way which I never really thought of it before. He talks about the quote, this is his quote to him, I don't know, he probably got it somewhere else. The race/gender lobby, or the agenda. In other words, you now have the blacks who are trying to redress the wrongs of 100 years, and therefore you have to give me quotas, and you have to give me get me into medical school when I wouldn't there otherwise get in, and you have to give me a job and I wouldn't otherwise get a job. And then the women, who's the same thing I think. We've been downtrodden for longer. So we want to get to this, and we want to get that, we want to be on top of the man, and this, and he goes to things I wouldn't talk about because it's not, they are covered, it's not, it's even a little bit, it would be a rack of sneers if I would speak about it. Had to do with certain they know about it. But apparently even in that area, there's this movement in the non-Jewish world where because women were terribly downtrodden, I'm talking about, I can say it because it's really going on the Thursday year, but it's true that women were terribly downtrodden in physical matters, between husband and wife, terribly, they were viewed as objects, etc. I mean, I'm sure you've seen this around, I'm not saying any solution, which you don't know. So then, so good, type of terrible. Anyone who's getting married or gotten a fuss with me knows, if even you got the public smooth, which I don't go into so many details, knows that I say, Zafir, Sheree, Fakir. But now, according to this guy, I don't know what the way he must have some good authority, now it's the reverse. Where the women, because we've been so downtrodden for all these years, now we're going to turn it the other way around. Now, interestingly, the halacha believes a little bit the other way around. The halacha has the mitzvah sheref, susim, and usim, yigra. For Karen, these matters is for Karen, it's a husband obligation to a wife, and it's not exactly the same obligation in the other direction. It's a little bit different. But apparently it's never gone much further. He went into detail, which are very not nice to talk about. But if you put it together, the race, gender, lobby, whatever you call it there. So I realize that. That's a feminism also. Except not that they want to be men wannabes. They want to be different than men and better than men. But different and better is fine, but not to put down the men. So, and then when Tiani is 90, the woman who conceived that feminism has something to do with these obligations is saying that you want to prove a point and that you're a quota wannabe. And even though it says the end, my love for Judaism and Hashem is a driving force. So in my opinion, love for Judaism and Hashem can be manifested and expressed in many, many ways. There are many ways, there are many mitzvahs in Mount Tovim, the person can demonstrate how much he loves Judaism and loves Hashem, he or she. And the person that picks the dafka, such a mitzvah, when there are many other mitzvahs around which can be done, it seems to me it has something to do with feminism. And that was the third point I told these ladies, was when I met at that time. That aside my objections about on the actual halacha, and aside from the fact that it's a change in Minhagi Yisrael, which would be a problem under any circumstance, in any condition, it seems to me that many of the individuals who are involved or spearheading this new movement, quote-unquote, have agendas, feminist agendas. And not only that, but they were moving close to non-Orthodox groups, many of the people who were at the forefront of this movement. And to this day, and I must tell you that now 9-10 years have passed since that conversation, and the 13-14 since I originally was signed, and it's nothing much has changed. A rabbi called me, I won't mention when I identify you. A rabbi called me up, what should he do? Did someone want to have a woman to a bat mitzvah? I said, well, the bat mitzvah should lane from the Devil Torah, and the Torah at a bat mitzvah. What should he do? I said, I think he should be against me. I know I'm against him, but what should I do about it? I said, what are you going to do about it? They're not going to do it in the shul. No, they're doing it in someone's house. It's in someone's house, and then they rent it out a hall, and Rabbi X, and Rabbi Y, and Rabbi and Reverend Z, and then Mrs. Q, the Dr. Q, came to speak and participate. This is the same people I saw it from so many years ago. Nothing much has changed. The individuals, they were, well, forgive me for using the word rabble-rousers, anti-Orthodox. Oh, it's the word anti-men. That's how people use it. Whatever, they didn't demonstrate to me that Judaism, love of Judaism and Hashem was a driving force. I didn't sense that at all. Maybe they have, I give credit, I don't want to be so critical. There probably is a love of Judaism, love of Hashem, but it's misplaced, misguided by the aside. The person who loves his wife and treats his wife wrong, and love opposite wrong, it's counterproductive. So this love of Judaism and Hashem, I think it's counterproductive also. I think so. When I put on tefillin each morning, I feel close to God, who according to the Kabbalah also with tefillin in heaven. That's it. That's exactly the point. That, you know, in the sense that I feel close to the tradition of the generation of Jews before me who have heeded its commandments. Huh? Feels closer? Doesn't she know that her mother, grandmother, great-grandmother, and all the answers that didn't do this commandment? She feels closer to her, to the men of her ancestry. But that's an obvious and glaring difference between men and women, which no one denies. So there it seems to me that it's not close to tradition, it's much further from tradition. Much further from tradition. She's convinced that on halakhic ground she has the right to do so. All right, I'm going to argue with her. Convinced, not convinced. But on any other side, it's wrong. It's wrong really for the same reason that the women's feel is wrong. No, it's exactly the same reason. Same three reasons. I think it's halakhically wrong. Maybe it's even a begadish, maybe. Against the middle of Yisrael at the very least. And I think it's inspired by the wrong motivation, in my opinion. Yes?
No. So in Shulchan Aruch, the person is down on every Chacham, that's why he's going to be in Israel. And that's one of the rules of the people in Israel.
No.
How come Rabbanim, I mean, you've seen what happened 50 years ago with the conservative, and Moshe tried his best, but you didn't see actually like a pyramid put against certain individuals. Why aren't the Orthodox and the Hinnom getting together to say,
I'll answer your question. The Cherem is undoubtedly a serious halakhic tool which is used for many centuries to achieve many goals. However, I must tell you that in my opinion the effectiveness of the Cherem was dramatically reduced in the post-emancipation era. The Cherem was work when you had a closed Jewish society which you couldn't get out of because you were in a family, you were nowhere. Today, the Cherem does not have that power. Unfortunately, there aren't any unified Kehillah, so the Cherem in one goes for four streets of different shul. And therefore, once it can't work, I believe it's counterproductive. If you use strong-arm tactics when they're not going to work, in my mind would be a big thing. I would never consider putting anybody in the Cherem about anything. And I haven't been afraid to take on certain people, but not to put these Cherem. Never. I would never. It would be counterproductive in my opinion. Let me go on. I put a Cherem? Never. Absolutely never. Ah, it's a different story. I wouldn't give this woman an Aliyah either. I never announced the shul. Someone who was kept his wife in Aguna. So we were told not to count the shul. If we come to show, we told him we wouldn't continue the davening. He didn't come. Okay. That wasn't a chair. Yeah? I can best I can best respond by quoting the Tshuva of Moshe, which was about the women's liberation. The women was the Tshuva of Rabbi Kelemer Shalita, when he was still a rabbi yet in Brookline, and he had plenty of Torahs in Brookline, a big academic town, over these issues. And when Moshe references, a woman who wants to keep a mitzvah, which is not required to do so, because she wants to volunteer, so it was used to bring the women's liberation. That was the recall family of the Beit Shemesh. But a woman who insists that it's not right that she's exempted from the mitzvah. She wants to consider herself that she's a mitzvah viosa. That's kfirut. That is heresy. And I was thinking to me that many of the branches of the feminist movement, which is being movement, and I can't, you know, I'm not familiar with every last nuance within it, are kofrim. That they, or kofrim if they have a male, that they deny the eternal truth of Torah that women are exempt from certain mitzvahs. It's not fair, it's not right. That we believe that what God does is right. That's a surah tamar polo, tzadik v'yashuru. But if God did it, not only is it right, but it's just and fair. It is fair. Of courts will say, but we don't see it as being fair. So my response is always the same. A lot of people don't look for it to be fair. You see someone never died at age 3 years old or 15 years old from a terrible disease or a terrible accident. It's not fair. Right? That's our first reaction. It's not fair. Someone is poor. It's not fair. It's our first reaction. But Siddiq Adin tells us that we don't see why. Maybe we don't understand how this could possibly happen. 6 million Jews died. It's not fair. We don't see it. We don't understand it. It's beyond our understanding and comprehension. But we have to believe, we believe in Ashkocha Purot, which we do. Everything in the world comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Every historical event comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, whether it be national, whether it be individual. It's national, so we have to look at a certain way towards certain things, individual a different way, topic for a different discussion. Some of the sick, some of the prophets, some of it. We believe everything comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Kavach Homer, you believe that the Torah comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Torah, written in divine wisdom, dictates that a woman's part of a tefillin, she's part of a tefillin. She's part of a sukkah, she's part of a sukkah. And don't start saying it's not fair. You say it's not fair, but you're a kosher, that's what our Moshe said. And many of the feminists are kosher, what can I say? I only use the word, but that's what I said. Therefore, I finish this associates itself completely, even from the branches of which are not so tainted. But it's very hard to draw those lines, you know, it's all what it's a big movement. It's very hard to know where to draw the line. So I think we shouldn't get involved in the movement. Even though we're sympathetic to the plight of women who are being discriminated against, or being, unfortunately, and in some cases, even abused by the halacha. People use the halacha to abuse a woman. It's terrible. It's an outrage. Yeah, I think it's outrageous. And I've met with individuals who belong to groups which are some a little bit associated with feminists, a little bit. Speak to them, because I feel like they're right. But the feminist movement as such, no way. No, I don't have nothing to do with them. Anyway, why rabbinical school? Next page. Why rabbinical school? She likes to learn. I love to learn. Very nice. Why not a PhD in Jewish studies? No. I don't want an objective academic approach toward a living Torah. So why should I give up from a woman? Ah. It's not just the curriculum of why this is not. Not just the curriculum of why this is. If it was, then I could study at an institution like Drisha, whose mandate is to teach women on a level equal to that of the men's yeshiva. What's Drisha? All right. Very difficult to talk about Drisha. Let me explain to you why it's difficult for me. The more good that something does, the harder it can talk against it. Talk against conservative reform, that's easy. That's no problem. I can talk against them today, till tomorrow, not a problem. Drisha is Orthodox, as I can say, it's strictly Orthodox, and the people who are running it are Shomer Mitzvahs. I guess we might call a couple of problems, Lucia. But I'll just give you a kick to it because I really don't, it's not my role here to speak a hill of this institution. Some things have come to my attention by some students there in terms of biblical interpretation, which I find very problematic, to say the least. Aleph. I mentioned to you before that this program, which I don't know if it's an accurate description, mandated to teach women on the level equal to that of men's yeshiva, yeah. Frankly, I don't think that's the way to go. I told you before, I don't think it's the proper way. And of course, third is what I said before, that there are those who are very much involved in the feminist movement who are involved in Drisha, like this person says, she says she's going to end up going. Right? She'll consider going if she's accepted. Right? Why not? Why doesn't she want to go? Because Drisha gives no degrees, no ordination, and it's not fair. My male counterpart to be a rabbi of the yeshiva, principal of the day school, Christian of a shul, right? I don't understand. Why can't this woman be a principal of a Jewish day school? I know many women who are principals of Jewish day school. I don't understand.
All right. So what? But she contrasted. She claimed that a Jewish woman cannot be a principal of a Jewish day school. I mean, that's wild. That doesn't. Well, Rav of the Yeshiva and Rav of the Shul, that's not that. That she's right. She can't be. But the principal of a day school, a Jewish day school, I think the custom has been, certainly because it's a girl school, that women are principals of these institutions. And not only in what you might call the more modern circles of Yeshiva U, but you all know that Yaakov's, most of them have not women principals. I think they have most. So they found that they're the most effective principals. They know exactly from the inside. So I recommend, maybe she should take a different tack. Maybe she made a mistake in the fact. Shalom and Matisse. Maybe she write her a letter. She can be a principal of a Jewish day school. Maybe she should apply to a Beis Yaakov somewhere. And maybe upon requisite recanting and repentance that she might be considered. Yeah. Anyway. The title rabbi means something. It carries with its connotations of authority. Correct. There's exactly the rub. I want to be straight out. This is the rub. A woman, according to Shita Sarambam, Rambam is accepted by Halacha, and Hilchos Malachim, a woman is not supposed to occupy a position of Sarara. Sarara means authority. I couldn't give a better translation. It carries with its connotations of authority. It's true. It's true. It's true. Now, it seems to me that is the main reason why a woman cannot serve as a rabbi. There are other many other technical reasons of the ritualistic problems. I mean, in terms of, is Yerusha, an inheritance, the money goes to a man and a brother, not to the sister. And four, as we said before, minyan. Women are exempt from minyan, don't count towards the minyan, the men are obligated to go to minyan and they count for a minyan. So what's the common thread between all these four? So let me just give one clarification. And that is that we should not think that the rules concerning testimony and inheritance are absolute. On the contrary, there are those who maintain that the qualifications and testimony indicate what little regard that. It's a good question. I mean, I want to, as you ask it,